Never mind they are eating meat, non-veg. If they were happy, I wouldn't say anything. But they're not happy, therefore I am stressing on this point. They're not happy. Therefore Prabhupada is stressing on this point. No non-veg. But if they were happy, then he would not. So you see, the mood of the pure devotee is full of love. He just wants people to be happy. You see? He can't feel them suffering. Because if they are experiencing dukkha, he's also feeling dukkha. But if they feel sukh, he also feels sukh. This in English is called empathy. I don't know what the word is in Hindi. When you're feeling what the other person is feeling. Prabhupada gave the example, if I prick my finger, no one else is hurt. But for a pure devotee, if you prick your finger, he also feels the pain. You understand? So because Prabhupada was feeling the pain of the conditioned souls in the material world, because of that, he left Vrindavan to try to give them some relief from the suffering in the material world. He left Vrindavan at very advanced age, 69 years old, he began his mission. Most people are winding down at 69. Finished. He's only starting his worldwide mission at age 69. Why did he do it? He was already pure devotee. His Guru Maharaj, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, was the greatest Vaishnava. He was connected to the parampara, to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He traveled and preached all over India. He was recognized by all his godbrothers as a great learned teacher, and that's why they gave him the name Bhaktivedanta Swami. Because he had the bhakti and he had the Vedanta. He had everything. Here and here. In English we say, the total package. Complete. So why he left Vrindavan? To take a risk to travel to the Malecha Desh. He's in Vrindavan. Sri Vrindavan Dham. For whose benefit did he do that? For your benefit. Not for his. For your benefit. To bring you the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because he could not convince the Indian people to take through this line, so he came up with a plan. I'll go through America and bring the Americans back, and then the Indians will copy because they like to copy the Americans. And it worked. It worked. Because we are white, people are interested. Oh, why they have taken it up? We gave it up. We're not interested. Why they're giving it up? I mean, we're giving up what you're all wanting, to go to America, to be rich, because the streets are paved with gold and houses made of silver, right? Why we gave that up to come here? Maybe there's something better here. People began to think. Prabhupada used to call us his dancing white elephants. He said, if you see elephants dancing, that is nice, but if they are white, that is something special. So we were the dancing white elephants. Attracted the attention. So what is the program here now? Any local brahmacharis here? What's the program now? I am the guest, so I don't know this. What is it? So he said, speak till 3 o'clock. He's thinking that I'm tape recorder. You press the button. But if you give Bhagavad Gita, then I can share with you what Krishna is speaking, which is more important. You know, one of the important mantras, the very first mantra of the entire Bhagavat, Srimad Bhagavatam, is Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This is the shloka he wants me to speak on. He said he opened at random. So maybe this is the shloka that Krishna wants us to look at. Because nothing happens by accident. So Krishna wants us to examine this shloka. Maybe it applies to you. Maybe it doesn't. Let us read and see. The shloka goes like this. Thus, the wise living entity's pure consciousness becomes covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. So, this is a very important verse. Let's chant the Sanskrit, because Krishna, he spoke the Sanskrit. But you don't have anything to read, so you have to hear, Shravanam. I speak, you hear, and then you repeat. Avritam Jnanam Etena. Avritam Jnanam Etena. Jnanino Nitya Vedina. Jnanino Nitya Vedina. Kama Rupena Kunteya. Kama Rupena Kunteya. Here's a long word. In Sanskrit, they have long words. Dushpurena, Dushpurena Nalena. Dushpurena Nalena. They also have short words. Cha.
Cha.
The short words, they're the saving grace. We go word for word. Avritam. Covered. Jnanam. Pure consciousness. Etena. By this. Jnanina. Of the knower. Nityavairina. By the eternal enemy. Kamarupena. In the form of lust. Kunteya, O son of Kunti, Dushpurena, never to be satisfied, Analena, by the fire, Cha, also. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Thus, the wise living entity's pure consciousness becomes covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. Responsively, please. Thus, the wise living entity, pure consciousness, becomes covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied, and which burns like fire. So there are many very interesting points here for our consideration in this shloka. First, Prabhupada says he's speaking about the wise living entity. So we are all originally wise. That means our original position is Sat Chit Ananda. It's eternal, full of knowledge, which means wise, and full of bliss. Sat Chit Ananda. So that is the natural consciousness of the eternal living entity, of which we are all eternal living entities. But our pure consciousness has become covered. Just like you can take a blanket and you can cover somebody and they can't see the light. They think it's nighttime. You take off the blanket, oh, it's day. So when you're covered, you cannot see reality. Reality is blocked from your vision. You understand? So our pure consciousness is covered, so therefore we cannot see reality. What we do see, we take that to be reality. Just like if someone is covered with a blanket, he opens his eyes, so he comes to the conclusion it must be night. But when you take off the blanket, then he sees reality, it's actually day. So our pure consciousness is covered, but not by a blanket, but by kama-rupena, the form of lust, kama, desires. We have so many desires all woven together that they become like a blanket. You know what is a quilt? In English, a quilt is when you have all different colors and different cloths, different colored, all sewn together. Quilt. So it's just like kama rupena. It's a blanket or a quilt with so many desires of all different colors woven in, covering us. So what we see is not reality, but we just see what's under the cover. And we come to the conclusion that that is reality. Now, it's interesting that this blanket of lust, kama rupena, has certain qualities. One of the qualities is that it can never be satisfied. You can never feel fulfilled or satisfied. And therefore, because we never feel satisfied, frustration comes. Due to that feeling that I'm not satisfied, we feel frustrated that we're not satisfied, and therefore comes anger. So from kam comes krodh, anger. Because the kam can never be satisfied. So that frustration leads to krodh, anger. And because we're angry, we're going to try and satisfy that lust no matter what. I will not be defeated. And so from that krodh comes lobe, greed, kam, krodh, lobe. Lobe, greed, is kam to the nth degree. Unbridled kam is greed. You can have a little bit of kam, but lobe is unlimited. You're never thinking it's enough. Even if you are a krorpati, which we see the bachans, they're krorpatis. Even he's showing off in his new movie, he's krorpati. Still not enough. You have to have more, more, more and more. And anyone gets in our way, we finish them. This is lobe. And from that lobe, we don't trust anybody. Anybody who's competing with us, trying to get in our way, trying to stop us from accumulating more and more, So we have negative feelings towards other people. This is called envy, matsarya. And then we feel very proud that I am so wealthy, I have so much, I am better than everybody else who doesn't have what I have. This is a false sense of self-worth based on some external accumulation of material items. This pride is the furthest thing from humility. Because our natural position is to be humble, to be the well-wisher. But when I'm proud, I am not the well-wisher. I am nervous that anybody else is trying to steal what I have. So one lock on the door is not enough. At least three locks on the door and chokidar in front with gun. And high wall with glass on top. And this is all called moha, illusion. So the Sanskrit word for pride is mada. What's the word for intoxicated? Also mada. It's the same word. Since our natural constitutional position is humility, the furthest thing away from humility is pride. So that means we're in the most intoxicated position when we're filled with pride. It's the exact opposite of humility. When we're in a humble mood, we are sober. And when in prideful mood, we are completely intoxicated with ourselves and our possessions. And we're thinking, I'm the most wonderful person. I come from the most wonderful family. We see this today. And they're thinking that my country is the best country. My dharma is the best dharma. Everything is related to me is the best. When Prabhupada came to America, he found people who were willing to forget about that and to hear that maybe something is better. Because in America, everybody's always thinking they're better. We're the best. We win the most gold medals. We have the most money. We have the most this and that and everything, the best of everything, the biggest and best. But he found people who were open to hear, maybe there's something better. And he taught us Bhagavad Gita. So here in this verse, thus the wise living entity's pure consciousness becomes covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. So, Prabhupada in his purport, he explains that in the Manusmriti, it is said that lust cannot be satisfied by any amount of sense enjoyment. Just as fire is never extinguished by a constant supply of wood. If you put more wood on the fire to put it out, that will not work. It will only increase the fire. So if we're giving more sense enjoyment to the senses never become satisfied. They only want more and more. In the material world, the center of all activities, Prabhupada says, is sex. And thus this material world is called Maitunya Agara, or the shackles of sex life. One time I was at a class, and the speaker was speaking about how this sex life is, as is mentioned here, is the center of everything. So one Indian gentleman picked up his hand. He said, why are you always speaking about sex? In India, we don't speak about these things. So then the speaker said, you may not speak about it, but by judging by the population, you're doing it. The population, when I first came to India, in 1975 has more than doubled. More than doubled. It's 1.2 billion now. They may not talk about it, but something's happening. One thing I noticed in 1975 when I came, there was about 600 million people in this country. And in every bazaar, it's filled with fruit, vegetables, every food stand and shop was filled. Now that there's double the amount of people, still every shop is full. All the fruit wallets are filled with fruit and vegetables. There's no difference, even though there's double amount of mouths eating. That means that Krishna has supplied abundant foodstuffs from the earth that can feed everybody. Even when the population doubles, still there's no lack. So Prabhupada continues, in the ordinary prison house, criminals are kept within bars. Similarly, the criminals who are disobedient to the laws of the Lord are shackled not by bars, but by sex life. Advancement of material civilization on the basis of sense gratification means increasing the duration of the material existence of a living entity. So, because the whole focus of most governments is sense gratification for the citizens, therefore, their most important consideration is increasing the lifespan. If you live longer, you can enjoy more. This is the rationale. This is how businesses think also, not just governments. Businesses think that way. Because the older you are, the more we can sell to you. And how many people here think that people open a business for your benefit? They open a business for their own benefit. The products that they make, you know, they advertise, this is the best thing for your health. It's actually best thing for their pocketbook. How many people in this room, oops, I just realized my wife's going to kill me because I didn't do what she told me, which was to put this here and press this button. Now it's pressed. Is it working? Okay. How many people here are studying business administration? How many people have gone to school for that university? A few. Here are some of the things they teach you. A, if you want to have a successful business, you need repeat customers. Is this correct? The whole focus is to make sure that if you have a customer, you don't lose him. Once, it takes a lot of time and energy to get a customer. Once you get him, you have to have him forever, a repeat customer, whatever it takes. Is it not? That's the basic principle of business administration. Let's look at the health industry. The health industry has become a business now. People become a doctor because it's a good business. They open hospitals because it's a good business. The same principles of business apply in the health industry. What is a repeat customer in the health business? Someone who's sick. Is it in their interest to cure you? Is it good for business to cure you? Because they lose you as a customer. Therefore, they've developed medicines to make sure that you become a repeat customer. And they give it a name called side effect. This will cure your headache, but you'll come back with stomach cramps or whatever. So every medicine you have now has side effects because they need to keep you as repeat customer. Is this dharmic? Is this dharmic? No, it's adharmic. Let's look at Ayurveda. Ayurveda wants to cure you. They don't want you as a customer. Why? Because it's not a business. It's not a business. Prabhupada, he's giving Krishna consciousness. It's not a business. So what we're giving out of love. What you give out of love is not a business. You don't expect a return. Because the interest is not for my benefit, it's for your benefit. But if I have a business, the interest is not for your benefit, it's for my benefit. That's the meaning of business. How many people here in this room know that there is a cure for cancer? Nobody. So you're all under the illusion there's no cure for cancer. They want you to think that way because it's very good for business. How many people get grants trying to find cancer cures? How many people are maintaining their families, maintaining universities, maintaining medical programs? It's a huge business. And as soon as you find a cure for cancer, the whole thing collapses. You understand? People won't, there's no more grants because we found a cure. The doctors, you don't have repeat customer anymore. You have cancer, take this pill, I won't see you ever again. Hospitals, they lose business. They can't find a cure. It's not possible. Too many people will lose their livelihood. So they keep saying there's no cure for cancer, but there's a cure. Let me tell you a true story. One of my godbrothers, Satyanarayan Prabhu, he was in medical school in New York. He met the devotees, and he wanted to become a devotee. His parents said, no, you're going to give up your medical career to become a Hare Krishna? But he heard Prabhupada. He read Gita. He was convinced. I want to join this. They said, if you give up your medical career and you become this Hare Krishna sect, we write you out of the will. They were a rich family. So what could he do? He joined the Hare Krishnas. They took him out of the will. He would get nothing when they passed on. All the millions of dollars, he would get zero. So many years went by. He kept in touch. And what happened was that his mother contracted cancer. And then he was writing more often, and she was saying, I was going to this therapist and that therapist. Then she said, it's hopeless. Everywhere I've gone, they've given me so many treatments, and it's incurable. So he flew back to New York. He said, I can cure you. She laughed at first, but then he said, what is the loss? Everywhere you've gone, they say there's nothing that they can do for you. Just try it. See what happens. It's no loss for you. So he put her on a carrot juice and vegetable juice fast. For 30 days. Then he told her, call your doctor and go for a checkup. The doctor found no sign of the cancer. It was completely gone from her body. He couldn't believe it. So what happened? They wrote him back into the will. They wrote him back into the will. That was in the 90s. Now the mother and father have passed on, and he's quite wealthy. So there is a cure for cancer. But they won't, in America, it's illegal to say there's a cure for cancer. There was one doctor, Dr. Huldah Clark, she couldn't practice in America anymore because she was saying, I know how to cure cancer. So she had to move to Mexico, Tijuana. It's on the border. People would fly to San Diego, drive across to her clinic in Tijuana, get cured, and then come back to America. So there's no cure for cancer because of lust, because of greed, because they need your money. Your suffering, finances their sense gratification, sends their kids to college, feeds their kids, they go out for the restaurants and movies, because you're paying so much money for a cure for cancer. That's there, but they say it's not there. So they put you on some programs that don't work. Because you're now a repeat customer. You're a regular customer. Good for business. Who benefits? The shareholders benefit. You have shares in a company or a hospital. You have repeat customers, always sick, you're doing well. The doctors do well. How many people have had this experience? You go to a doctor and he says you need a certain, you know, you have a certain problem. I recommend this medicine for you. Do they give you a choice? You can either take this, 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 or this, or I recommend this one. Why do you think they recommend a particular medicine? You probably think because that's the best medicine to cure you, right? Hold on to your seats. The pharmaceutical companies give them a kickback. If you recommend our product, you get 10% or 20% back. It's all business. The whole world is now business. Who's shocked hearing this? Nobody. You already knew. Okay, there's a few of you who are shocked. Welcome to the real world. The material world. That we're trying to take you out of. That we're trying to show you there's something else. So, Prabhupada says here that this lust is the symbol of ignorance by which the living entity is kept within the material world. While one enjoys sense gratification, it may be that there is some feeling of happiness. But actually, that so-called feeling of happiness is the ultimate enemy of the sense enjoyer. Why? Because it keeps you in the illusion that everything is okay. But everything's not okay. I went on the internet today to do a little research. And this is what I found out. The death rate is still 100%. Everyone still dies. The scientific community has made zero progress in this field. Zero progress. Everyone still dies, 100%. Everyone still gets old. They've made zero progress in this field. Although they now sell anti-aging chemical cosmetics, but when my wife wanted to go to this cosmetic store, when we saw the lady who was selling it, she was very old and wrinkled. So it didn't give us much faith that it worked. And the disease, everyone still gets sick. They've made zero progress in this field. Why do I say zero? Because as soon as they solve one problem, five more spring up. We have 20th century diseases that never existed before. Cancer is one of them. There was never such a thing as cancer over 100 years ago. AIDS was never such a thing. SARS was never such a thing. Swine flu was never such a thing. Avian flu was never such a thing. These are all modern diseases. Why are these modern diseases here? Because of the concept that a successful business is to have repeat customers. That is the reason. You want me to explain that so you can understand? How many people, when you buy a product, read the label? Only a handful. If you look at the label of the products you buy, all of them are chemicals. The body was never designed to ingest these chemicals. For millions of years, these chemicals never ever went into a human body, never ever went into an animal body. Now, these chemicals are in everything. And our body doesn't know how to adjust to it. That's why we get sick. How do these chemicals get into our bodies? Well, number one cause, shampoo. Filled with chemicals. You're in the shower. Hot water on your head opens up all your pores. You put the chemicals of the shampoo in there, goes right into your brain, right into your bloodstream. Number one cause. Number two, your toothpaste. Unless you're getting Ayurvedic toothpaste. All the other toothpastes, Colgate and all those, full of chemicals, go right into your mouth. You may spit it out, but half of it's already gone into your bloodstream. Now what happens when these chemicals go into your bloodstream? Maybe this is a little off the topic, but I'm going to get back to the topic. What happens when the chemicals go into your bloodstream? It inhibits your white corpuscles, the white blood cells, to do their job. What is their job? The job is immunity, to protect you from any things that come from outside. So these chemicals destroy your immune system. They arrest your immune system. So now anything that comes into your body flourishes, like viruses and other kinds of bacteria flourish now because your immune system has been checked by the chemicals. That's not good for you. It's good for the medical field, though. Very good for them. Who's in the medical field? Well, the pharmaceutical companies, the hospitals, the doctors. They're all making a nice livelihood off of your illness. Because if you were healthy, they wouldn't have a livelihood. They'd be out of business. So the repeat customer syndrome, or the profit motive syndrome, that I do something and I get a profit for me, for my benefit, is what has destroyed Vedic culture. And the cause of it is lust. Because I'm not satisfied with what I have to have more. And this lust is never satisfied, burns like fire, and destroys our consciousness. So Prabhupada came to save us from all that, to give us knowledge. The same knowledge that Lord Chaitanya gave to his disciples. The same knowledge that Krishna gave to the Pandavas. Raja Vidya Raja Guyam Pavitram Idam Uttamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam Susukam Kartumagyayam. Krishna explains 9th chapter, shloka number 2. Raja Vidya, this knowledge is the king of education. Raja Vidya, the topmost knowledge. Raja Vidya, Raja Guyam, it's the most confidential knowledge. Prabhupada translates the most confidential knowledge as the most secret of all secrets. That which is confidential is secret. Just like I may have to go to a psychiatrist. So everything is very confidential. He's not allowed to speak out about my situation to anybody. That's confidential. So Krishna is saying that the knowledge I'm speaking to you, Arjuna, is the most confidential, Rajaguyam, the most secret of all secrets. Pavitram, this is the purest knowledge. No tinge of anything impure. No tinge of anything unholy. No tinge of exploitation. The purest knowledge. Uttamam, it's the most transcendental knowledge. This knowledge is from a different realm, transcendental to this material knowledge. What is material knowledge? I'll give you an example. In the 60s, I went to university. I got my degree. In the 60s, you may be surprised to hear, we were taught in the biology and chemistry classes about a new discovery. What was that new discovery? DNA. It was a new discovery. DNA and RNA. No one had heard about it before. It's new. Anyway, I attended the classes, I gave the answers, and I passed. I have a degree. However, since the 60s, which was 50 years ago, science has advanced. If I gave the same answers today as I gave in the 60s, I would fail. So actually, I have a degree in ignorance. Not in knowledge. In ignorance. I failed. But in those days, I passed. But today, I fail. I know nothing. You see? Similarly, those of you who are getting your degree now, in 2050, you'll also be holding degrees in ignorance. And your children will say, Daddy, how can you believe such a thing? Maybe some of the parents are a little bewildered. The kids are always on the computer, on Facebook, and they don't understand this. They're lost. Well, these kids now, when they become 60, 50 or 60, their kids are going to be into something that they're going to be lost, completely lost. So that's the material world, always changing, always refining, and it goes on forever. But Krishna is saying, here is the full, complete, total knowledge, perfect and complete. It's the highest knowledge, the most transcendental, the purest, the most confidential, perfect and complete, there's nothing beyond this. It's already here. Pratyakshabhagamam dharmyam. And how can we understand this knowledge? Directly from within the heart. Comes from within. Doesn't come with a diploma from an institution. Prabhupada used to say, and don't take offense, people who are less intelligent, they go get a degree from a university, so they can show people, I'm intelligent. Here's my degree. Now I can get a job. An intelligent person doesn't need that. They're already intelligent. They don't need a paper to prove it. So this knowledge that Prabhupada's giving us, coming from Krishna and Lord Chaitanya, can be directly understood from within. Krishna explains this in Bhagavad Gita in several verses. I'll quote a few just to show. 10:10. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. Whoever engages in my devotional service with some love, dadami buddhi yogam tam. Krishna gives you the intelligence. Buddhi. Krishna gives the buddhi. That's 10:10. 15:15. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matasmritir jnanam apohanam cha. Krishna says, I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me comes knowledge and remembrance. You want knowledge? Krishna's right here. He'll give it to you. I tested it out. You know, I didn't accept this teaching blindly. I tested it. So if I wanted to know something, I would just meditate on it, think about it, because Krishna's in my heart. He can give me that knowledge. And then he would give. He says he'll give, and he gives. You have to go deep. You have to go inside. You have to connect to Krishna and say, Krishna, what is the answer? I want to know this thing. How many people here have heard that Krishna fulfills your desires? If your desire is to know something, Krishna will fulfill that desire and give you that knowledge. I tested it out. There's another verse. Krishna says, Ananyas chintayantu mam ye jana paryupashate tesham nityabhi yuktanam yoga kshemam vaham yaham. That if you make me number one, you have no other thought except for me, I will preserve what you have and carry what you lack. Oh, Krishna will carry what I lack. That's a good deal for me. So I remember that day, I pulled out my Gita and I said, Krishna, this is what you're saying. And I quoted the shloka. I'm going to now surrender to you, but don't you forget. You're going to protect what I have and carry what I lack. I was younger then, but I wanted to make sure that Krishna didn't forget. I said, look, there's the shloka. So I surrendered, and Krishna took care of me like I couldn't even believe. Better than I could have done myself. So I tested things out, and I saw they were true. So, pratyakshavagamam dharmyam, this knowledge can be revealed directly from within your heart. Susukam kartum, and then everything you do becomes joyful. Everything you do, you're happy. But not just happy, overjoyed. Susukam. Not just sukam, susukam. Happier than happy. More joyful than joyful. Susukam kartum. Everything you do becomes joyful. Has anybody ever noticed that Radhanath Swami is joyful? Does the process work for him? Will it work for you? Better be convinced. Be convinced. It can work for everybody. Susukam kartum avyayam. That joy is never ending. You can become ecstatic and it's always increasing. That is Krishna consciousness. That is Krishna consciousness. Anything else is not Krishna consciousness. Susukam, always blissful, always joyful, always happy, always going within to talk to Krishna, to pray to Krishna, to have a relationship with Krishna. That's what it means. It doesn't mean putting on Vaishnav dress and tilak and not talking to Krishna. Not studying the books. Not praying. Doesn't mean that. You have to establish a relationship with Krishna, and putting on dhoti is not establishing a relationship with anybody. Establishing a relationship with Krishna means you have to start communicating with him from within. My wife, whenever we go somewhere or do something, we come back, the first thing she does, she goes to our murtis, Sri Sri Radha Damodar, and she tells them everything. We went here, we went there, we saw this, we saw that. She shares everything. That's a relationship. Sometimes she gets angry. Krishna, why this has happened to my sister? Why you're not taking care? This is not acceptable. And poor Krishna, I'm sorry. Krishna likes that. He gets more pleasure, it says in the Bhagavatam, when Mother Yashoda chastises him, than all the prayers from the personified Vedas. Because that's a loving relationship. So that's what we need to establish. And in order to do that, we have to conquer our eternal enemy of lust, which is covering us, so that we don't see Krishna, so that we're not aware of Krishna. And when we leave this temple, we go out into the material world and we get lost in it. And we start thinking and acting like the non-devotees. So we have to always be conscious of who we are. And Krishna says that every fire has smoke, every mirror has dust, every embryo is covered by the womb. Similarly, everyone in the material world is covered by different degrees of lust. And they don't know how to wipe it away, how to get past it. But Lord Chaitanya has given us the foolproof medicine. Chaito darpanam ajanam mahadavagni nirvapanam. By chanting this, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. When you chant like this loudly, like you've just done, the sound vibration enters into your ear and then into your heart, and the Maha Mantra does the work of cleansing the consciousness. All I have to do is chant, and the Maha Mantra does the cleaning. It's just like you have a cleaning lady. All you have to do is pay her the money and she cleans the house. All we have to do is chant the mantra, and the mantra becomes the cleaning lady and cleans the heart. But in order for your cleaning lady to clean your house, the door has to be open. If the door is locked, she can't get in, then your house doesn't get clean. Is that logical? Similarly, if the ear is not hearing, if your mind takes you on a journey, so you're no longer home, the sound vibration doesn't enter into your consciousness. I gave this example the other day. Most of you weren't here because there was only like 25, 30 people in the room. So I feel safe to give it again, that I'm not repeating myself. How many people here chant japa? Almost everybody. How many people, when they chant their japa, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Sometimes, all of a sudden, they find they're at the end of the mala. And they can't remember, how did I get there? Does that sound familiar to anybody here? How many people have experienced that? You can't remember how you got to the end. You know why you can't remember? Because you weren't there. Your mind took you somewhere else. So maybe to the past, maybe to the present, maybe to the future. But your mind took you on a journey, and so you weren't home. But you program your body to keep on mumbling while you're not there. And when you come to the end of the round, you're snapped back into reality. Oops, round finished. Finished with that journey, you're back in the body, and what do? Count and run around chanted. But you weren't there, but I still counted. Sometimes I chant 16 rounds and I wasn't even there. But I programmed the body to keep on going. No, so this is, it may seem funny, but it's very serious. It's a very serious thing. Because as you do this more and more, what are you doing? You're creating a bad habit, a negative samskara. And what is that negative samskara? That it's all right to think when I chant. And it's not all right to think when you chant. Let me prove to you that it's not all right. Am I right in assuming that everybody here has got an education? You've all graduated? Yes? Let me see how many people are graduates. Most people. Very good. Almost everybody, except the children. So how many people remember when they were sitting in the class, professor was speaking, they were taking notes. You remember that? You took those notes very seriously because studying the notes meant you could pass the exam, right? So very carefully you would listen to that professor. Some people are expert in taking notes. But even the expert ones, sometimes their mind wanders. And what happens when your mind wanders? You miss the point that the professor's making, and you have to ask your neighbor, what was that last point? Maybe they're too busy writing, they don't even tell you. So you just look and you write it down yourself. Does that sound familiar? What does this teach us? This teaches us a very important fundamental thing. You should all write this down. When you think, you can't hear. When you think, you cannot hear. That's why you have to copy someone else's note. When you think, you cannot hear. If you're thinking when you're chanting japa, you cannot hear the mantra. If you don't hear the mantra, will the heart become purified? No. Is that logical? It's reasonable, isn't it? And it's fair also. If you don't hear, the mantra doesn't enter into the heart, no purification takes place, and you stay on the same level, year after year after year. Someone else who is hearing is making advancement like that. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's discussing these things with Arjuna, talking about yoga, talking about controlling the senses, controlling the mind. And then Arjuna stops and asks a question. He says, but look, it's very difficult to control the mind, isn't it? I mean, I think it's easier to control the wind than it is to control the mind. That's what Arjuna says to Krishna. How many people agree with Arjuna? It's easier to control the wind than the mind. You agree with Arjuna? And what does Krishna answer? Krishna also agrees. Yes, it's not easy. But it can be done. It can be done. And then Krishna tells how it can be done. Who knows how it can be done? By practice and by detachment. So Lord Chaitanya has helped us in this. Detachment. He says, look, it's very difficult to detach from something. It's much easier to become attached to something. So let's become attached to Krishna, and automatically you'll become detached from Maya. So detachment, we just become attached to Krishna. We become attached to Krishna Darshan, Harikatha, Krishna Prasad, Vaishnav Sangha, Krishna Sambad, Krishna Shiksha, everything relating to Krishna we become attached to. And so we lose the taste for material things, and so we become detached from that. And by practice. So we have to practice chanting and keeping the mind peaceful. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And the more we chant with a peaceful mind, then the sound vibration purifies the heart. And we get the result. We make advancement. We lose the taste for material life, and we become blissful. Su-sukam kartum. Everything we do is blissful. So this is the process, Shravanam. In that purport, where Krishna says it can be done by practice and detachment, Prabhupada speaks only about Shravanam. He doesn't even mention Kirtanam. The whole secret, Prabhupada says, is Shravanam, learning how to hear. If we solve the problem of Shravanam, automatically our Kirtanam will go on nicely. No problem. If our Shravanam is 100%, our Kirtanam will be 100%. If our Shravanam is 0, our Kirtanam will be 0. If your Shravanam is bad, can your Kirtanam be good? No. If the Shravanam is bad, the Kirtanam will be bad. From the bad Kirtanam, will you get Krishna Prema? No. Why should you? Those who do nice Kirtanam and Shravanam, they'll get Krishna Prema. Why should people who do it wrong get the same result as someone who do it right? Is that fair? Krishna is just and fair. You do it wrong, you don't get the result. Do it right, you get the result. So if we're not getting the result, we must be doing something wrong. Is that logical? Let me give you an example. Everybody here has had a headache before in their life. You go to the pharmacy, you get a tablet, drink it with water, headache goes away. It's the headache medicine, right? What happens? You go to the pharmacy, you get the same medicine, but you don't take it with water. You just hold it in your hand. Just hold it and hold it, hour after hour. Does your headache go away? Because I did something wrong. The right way is to take it with water. Wrong way is to hold it in your hand. If you do it the wrong way, you don't get the result. Same with chanting. You do it the wrong way, you don't get the result. Do it the right way, you get the result. Right way is with focused concentration, hearing the sound vibration of the mantra. Wrong way is to start chanting and then your mind takes you on a journey. Far, far away. That's the wrong way. So it helps to know what we're doing wrong, then we can correct it. Yes? So We have 20 minutes. I'm supposed to finish at 3. So in the next 20 minutes, do you want to hear how to do it right? Okay. This is called solving my Shravanam problem. So I'm going to give you some suggestions. What works for one person should work for other people, but everyone's unique. But I'm going to share with you from my experience, and hopefully that'll help you in your experience. This is what I recommend. Let's go to tomorrow morning. You're going to chant your japa. So the first recommendation is always to chant in the same place, a very nice place, you know, like a temple, your home temple, or wherever, some place that's nice and peaceful and calm. And you sit nicely, take a few deep breaths. And before you begin your japa, you want to talk to Krishna. You're going to talk to Krishna, okay? This is what you're going to say. Of course, this is from my experience. You can tailor it and adjust it to your own life, because we're all unique and all different. But this is what I came up with. My dear Lord Krishna, I want to thank you for everything that you've done for me. You've done so much for me. You give me everything. The air that I breathe that keeps me alive. You give me the water that quenches my thirst. The water that I keep clean with. You give me the food that nourishes my body. You give me the clothing that keeps me warm in the winter. You give me shelter to protect me from the elements. And I've never said thank you. I've just taken these things and never ever said thank you. So now I want to say thank you. And to show that I'm really sincere, and I want to not just say thank you, I want to give you a gift. This is from me. You can do it differently. And I say to Krishna, this is the gift I want to give you. I want to give you one mantra offenselessly. One pure mantra from my heart, filled with love, with no offenses, no motivation, no nothing. This is be my gift to you. And I close my eyes and I chant very slowly, full of love, right from the heart, to say thank you to Krishna. And I go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So that first mantra is my gift for Krishna. Then I finish the round. Round two, I do the same thing. I thank Krishna, I want to give you a gift. It will be an offenseless mantra from my heart with love. And the very first mantra of round two, close my eyes and chant with feeling and offer it as a gift of love to Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I do that for every round. So at the end, I've chanted 16 mantras full of love, unmotivated, no offense. And I do this every day. How many people have read or heard that if you chant even once in your lifetime an offenseless mantra, you can develop Krishna prema? How many people have heard that? So now I'm teaching you how to do it 16 times every day. Okay? Now something's going to happen if you do this, if you follow this. After a couple of weeks, you're going to experience a tremendous surge of Krishna consciousness. You're going to be more happy. You're going to be more enthusiastic. And you're going to come up with an idea. Why don't I do the first two mantras like that for Krishna? Because you feel so enthusiastic. And then every morning, you offer the first two mantras of every mala to Krishna as a gift of love. Full of devotion, right from your heart. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So now you're on track to chanting 32 offenseless mantras every day as your gift of love to Sri Krishna to say thank you for everything that he's done for you. Now what you're doing, besides offering a gift to Krishna, is you're also training your mind not to think while you chant for that one mantra. And after a couple of weeks, you can do two mantras without thinking. It's training your mind. A month later, you may decide, why don't I do the first three like that? Then you can chant three mantras without thinking any thoughts, directly from the heart, full of love and devotion to Krishna to say thank you for everything he's done for me. And then you're chanting 48 mantras every day offenselessly. You'll notice your Krishna consciousness shooting up like a rocket. Everyone will say, boy, you're really blissful these days. What's your secret? And you can share with them. This is what I called phase one of my going back to Godhead guarantee. How do you like it? Do you want to know phase two? Phase two deals with the rest of the mantra, the rest of the mala. Okay? Because we don't want to go back into Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Rama. So in order to do phase two, you have to have a recording of Srila Prabhupada chanting japa. You can get that. You can get that here? You know how Prabhupada chants, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Okay? So you get that. And after you do your heartfelt chanting as a gift to Krishna, the rest of the round you chant with Prabhupada, exactly synchronized. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Not faster, not slower, exactly in sync with Prabhupada, exactly. Now it may take a little practice until you get it exact. But once you get it exact, this is what happens. In order to get it exact, you have to be fully conscious. You can't be thinking. Because as soon as you fall behind or go ahead, you'll notice that the synchronization is lost. And so then you get back into the synchronization. So you have to concentrate and focus to hear it. So now we're focusing our concentration and training our mind to hear the mantra, and no thinking is going on. So now my japa immediately is a million times better. But there's an added benefit, an added bonus, because I not only hear my own japa, I hear Prabhupada's japa at the same time. So I'm getting double the benefit. I hear the pure devotee chanting, I hear my own chanting, I'm focusing my mind, I'm not thinking anymore, I'm really getting a benefit from this japa. And your Krishna consciousness takes off like anything. And what will you experience? Sukh sukam kartum. You just become blissful and joyful. After a while, nothing will disturb you. Whatever happens in your life, you just say, it's Krishna's mercy. I travel around the world, going here and there. Sometimes I speak to big crowds like this, 1,000 people. Sometimes we go to yoga centers, small ones in little villages, just 10 or 12 people show up. But whatever happens, it's all Krishna's mercy. If we get big crowd or little crowd, we get donation, we get zero donation. We have trouble getting there, or we have no trouble getting there. We see it all as Krishna's mercy, because Krishna is guiding our life. We're surrendered to Him. He's taking care of us. And whatever happens, it's meant for us to learn something. It's meant for us to learn to become detached, meant for us to overcome adversity, to learn to be equipoised, to learn to give up expectation, to learn how to accept everything that comes in my life. So many things we learn, and I'm just by realizing that everything that's coming to us is Krishna's mercy. Because the Shastra says that for one who has surrendered to Krishna, Krishna protects that person. You're no longer under the influence of the material energy, but you're now protected by Krishna. So whatever happens, Krishna is controlled, in control. Who is the perfect person who understood this in Shastra? And that is Prahlad Maharaj. No matter how many different ways Hiranyakashipu tried to kill his five-year-old infant boy, a five-year-old boy. And he was the greatest demon in the world. But Prahlad had no fear, no concern. He was 100% convinced that Krishna would always protect him, and Krishna always protected him. Finally, Hiranyakashipu went to the top of the highest mountain after putting Prahlad in a pit of snakes and boiling oil and all everything else. He went to the top of a mountain, threw him off the mountain. And Prahlad is falling. And the law of gravity means that V equals AT. Velocity equals acceleration times time. So you go faster and faster. So, as he's falling and the earth is looming up and he's about to smash, what is Prahlad thinking? He's thinking, oh, Krishna's waiting for the last second to save me. Just see. And then at the last second, Krishna saves him. Not the slightest doubt. 100% convinced. So we have to learn these things. And when Krishna sees that we have this faith in Him, He's very happy. I've had experiences in my life where I would have died. Really. I wouldn't be here today. But Krishna saved me. Do we have time to share these? So, okay. I was a brahmachari traveling throughout India distributing full sets of Prabhupada's books. And we were in Pondicherry. We would distribute full sets of Prabhupada's books to every library. College library, university library, school library, national library, local library, city library, whatever. Medical library. I went to medical libraries. I went to law libraries. That's another story. But at any rate, so we were in Pondicherry and it was late afternoon. I was with another devotee, so we decided to go to the beach. So there were some waves. So I like to catch the waves. So I went out into the waves, but the little waves coming into the shore, they were too small for me. I saw the big waves out there were more attractive. So I went out to the big waves. But then I discovered that the big waves were too big for me. And they were smashing me down. And then I noticed that I was caught in a riptide. A riptide is, you know, the water comes in and then goes out like this. So I was being pulled out to sea. I could see the shore was getting further and further away. And I'm trying to swim back, and another wave would come and smash me, and I go like this. And I was losing strength. And then one huge wave came, picked me up and smashed me, and I hit the bottom, the sand, you know, boom on the sand. Came up, I was swallowing water, and I was thinking, I'm going to drown. I'm going to drown. I had no more energy. So I just cried out, Krishna, save me. It was probably the most sincere prayer I ever made. Well, what happened next was the next wave that came was a gentle wave, and it pushed me forward. Three waves came in a row that were gentle. All of a sudden, these big, giant waves disappeared. Three waves, they pushed me forward, and after the third one, my foot felt some sand underneath. It was a sandbar. So I stood up on that sandbar, you know, above the neck, and I was able to breathe and get my strength back, and eventually I came back into shore. I was totally exhausted, but I realized Krishna had saved my life. I called out to him to save me, and he saved me. And before I called out to him, he didn't interfere with my life. But as soon as I said, okay, Krishna, I can't make it on my own, you save me, immediately he was there. So that was 1976. Then in 1990, I was in New York, and I had to drive to California. It was January. So I was driving across country, and I was coming near Chicago. Of course, I started early in the morning, but as I was coming into Chicago, now it was getting nightfall, and it was starting to rain. But as soon as the sun set, that rain became snow. And that snow was starting to pile up, collect onto the highway. So I wanted to go really fast to get, I was thinking, let me go as far as I can before I rest for the night. But then I would have to keep slowing down because the road was full of this snow. And as it got darker, that snow on the highway began to freeze and was becoming icy. So then a little voice said to me, take the next exit and finish driving for the day. But as I came up to that next exit, I thought to myself, let me try one more exit. I wanted to get a little further before the end of the day. So I ignored the voice. I kept on going. But what happened was the road was becoming more and more icy. I was going slowly, slower and slower. And then at a certain point, I lost control and it started sliding. And as the car started sliding, I tried to correct it by doing the wheel the opposite direction, but it only aggravated the sliding, and I was going sideways down the highway, sliding on ice. And I was hitting the brake and doing this and that, but it only aggravated the situation. Now I was going backwards. The car was slowly spinning around. I was going backwards. And in my mind, I envisioned going off the road and tumbling like this, ruining the car. And so I cried out, Krishna, help me! And then when I asked for Krishna to help me, the car turned front ways and went off to the side of the road, which was filled with snow, and the car came to a stop. And just at that moment, as the car came to a stop, one of these huge lorries passed me, whoom, in the lane where I would have been. And I realized, just a second ago, I was in that lane. And if I was there, I'd be mashed potato. You know what is mashed potato? But because I cried out help, Krishna pushed the car over to the side. And so the full potato is still here. But in both cases, Krishna saved my life because I called out to him. So I understood the purport of the Shastra, that Krishna will protect you. You just have to connect to him. And if we don't, if we want to act independently, Krishna will allow us to act independently. And we may come into a difficult situation which is dangerous, and our life may be at stake. However, even at the last second, if we call out to Krishna to save me, he will save you. Because we've dedicated our lives to his service. And he appreciates that. Prabhupada told me, he said, that when you surrender to Krishna, Krishna becomes obliged to you. He becomes obligated. Krishna feels that way. So, we began this talk about how the living entity's natural constitutional position is pure, full of wisdom, full of love, but that pure consciousness becomes covered by lust. And we talked a little about that, how the material world is all based on lust and greed and exploitation. And then we talked about how to solve the problem by taking Prabhupada's instructions to our heart and following his teachings, studying his books, taking up the process, solving our problem, and at the end of this life, going back home, back to Godhead. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yes. Microphone is coming. Some people say this is the best part, the questions and answers.
Hare Krishna.
Because sometimes there's a challenge and people like confrontation. What will he say now? Can he answer that question?
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Very nice lecture. You said like when we chant the holy name, like if you do in the wrong way, like when we chant and the mind goes on journey, so it happens like most when we chant. So you said we don't get any result. So it is said in, like I heard in some of this, like from some verses of scriptures, that the chanting the holy name is like a fire. Even if you chant knowingly or unknowingly, it works, like whether like a child touches the fire, whether he knows and doesn't know, it burns. So similarly, like you said, that doesn't give a result. So how does it work? Like even if...
Okay, he's made a good point. The challenge is on. Fire is fire. Whether a grown man who understands the nature of fire puts his hand in, or an innocent child, fire still burns. So he says, similarly, according to Shastra, even if you chant the Hare Krishna mantra unknowingly, you get the result. Right? So let's understand what that means. You get the result, but what result are we talking about? Prabhupada, for example, he chants Hare Krishna mantra and goes back home, back to Godhead. He chants perfectly, with full concentration and full devotion, full love. Now, if I chant with my mind everywhere, spaced out, can't even remember how I got to the next, to the end of the round, am I going to get the same result as Prabhupada? What do you think? Will I or will I not? Is it fair that someone who does it perfectly and someone who completely does it wrong will get the same result? Is it just? Of course not. So you'll get some benefit. In your next life, you'll be born in a devotee family and you can pick up where you left off. But you don't go back to Goloka Vrindavan. If you don't do it right, if you do it wrong, if you do it offensively, you see what I'm saying? So the way I look at it is a little different than Shastra, because Shastra is very kind, very gentle. If you don't succeed in this life, you pick up in the next life at the same place and carry on. That sounds good, huh? But let's look at reality. Is that really what happens? Krishna's saying, don't worry, whatever you don't accomplish in this life, you can pick up on the next life. No loss, no diminution. Is that what Krishna says? Now, is Krishna being very nice and kind to us? Let's analyze it and see what happens. So, in my next life, let's say I don't go back to Godhead in this life. I take birth again in a Vaishnava family, right? What happens the moment I take birth? Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya. I forget everything. I'm born in the deepest darkness of ignorance. I can't speak. I don't recognize anything. I can't walk. I can't talk. I can't eat. All I can do is sleep for the first 6 months. Can't, you know, I forget everything. Then I have to learn everything I knew in my past life. I have to learn over again. I have to learn how to walk. I have to learn how to talk. I have to learn how to read. I have to learn how to write. I have to learn how to bathe on my own, how to go to the toilet on my own. I have to learn A, B, C, D. I have to go to school and learn that all over again. Or if I don't go to English medium school, I have to learn ka, ka, ga, ga. Or if I'm born in Chinese family, and millions of people are, then you have to learn whatever they call them. So, in my opinion, that's a loss. Forgetting everything is a loss. So that's why I'm saying something which is a little more direct to our life, and that is this. Either go back home, back to Godhead, or if you don't, you go back to Pampers. That's it. Prabhupada went back to Godhead. But we may come back to Pampers. And for me, that is a loss. To forget everything is a loss. And there's no guarantee that my name will be Dinesh. It may be Mohammed. Still an Indian. Still living in Mumbai. Still speaking the same language, but your name is now Muhammad Ali. There's no guarantee. You're in the same Pampers. Or maybe your name is Chaya Devi. Ratnavali. There's no guarantee. So for me, that's a loss. Therefore, in this life, go back home, back to Godhead. Don't take the risk. This is serious business. You're either back to Godhead or back to Pampers. You understand? It's serious. Very serious. Now, I remember when we were in Manchester, we were staying with our friends, and they had a 3-year-old baby girl. Guess what? She wore Pampers. At age 3, still running around with those Pampers. You know why she wore Pampers? I don't have to explain it to the Matajis, but I'll explain it to you. Because she hasn't been potty trained yet to do it on her own. She forgot how to go to the toilet from the past life to this life. You understand? You forgot that. You forget everything. Therefore, Om Ogyan Timirandasya. I'm born in the deepest darkness of ignorance. Whatever you learned in this life, you're going to forget in the next life. You have to learn it all over again. Life after 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 life, we're learning the same things over and over again. How to walk, how to talk, how to read, how to write, how to bathe, how to go to the toilet. How many lifetimes does it take to learn the same thing over and over again when you finally say, enough, I'm going back to Krishna. So that's my understanding. I shared with you. Is that helpful? Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you very much. The process which you recommended, your own personal realizations that we chant along with Srila Prabhupada, that's phase 2, phase 3, like that. How much time does it take you to chant 16 rounds in that way?
I went through different phases in my chanting of japa. Should I give a little bit of my history? When I first met the devotees, I was already a yogi. I was already vegetarian, doing kundalini yoga. And so I was already following many of the things they said. I was already vegetarian, doing tapasya, yoga, this, that. The only thing I wasn't doing was chanting japa. So they said, we chant this mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, on this mala, once on every bead, all the way around, 108 beads, and we do that 16 times every day. And I went, oh my God. It was intimidating. So I began to associate with the devotees, read the books and everything, but I wasn't chanting. I was intimidated. Then one day I thought, well, let me try it. Let me just try, see what it is. So I sat down like this, looked at my watch, closed my eyes, and chanted, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And I chanted all the way till I came to the end. And because I was, you know, a yogi, I was into yoga and meditation, my mind was focused on it. So I came to the last bead and I looked at my watch, 10 minutes had gone by. So I thought, well, that's not bad. Let me try one more. Closed my eyes and I did it back. Finished another 10 minutes. So 20 minutes, wasn't so bad. So the next day I thought, let me try 4, I'll double it. So I did 4. Next day I doubled it, did 8, the next day 16. Then I carried on at 16 for many years. Then I went to India. 1975 I went to India. 1976 I was at the Mayapur festival. And then I was on this traveling Sankirtan party where we were distributing full sets of Srila Prabhupada's books. And we were so good at it that we were sent all over Southeast Asia. We not only did India, but we did Thailand, Malaysia, Singapore, Indonesia, Hong Kong, Philippines, like this. So the devotee I was traveling with, his name was Satyanarayan, he told me that one of our god brothers, who is now a sannyasi, but at that time he was brahmachari also, he said that he was doing 5-minute rounds. He could chant his 16 rounds, 5 minutes a round. 80 minutes means 1 hour and 20 minutes. So we were thinking if we could chant 5-minute rounds, we could get out earlier and distribute more books. By the way, that was Banu Maharaj now. So we heard that Banu was doing 5-minute rounds. So I got myself a stopwatch. And I would sit down before chanting japa and put that stopwatch there. And I'd take my beads out of the bead bag. And I'd chant as fast as I could, looking at the watch. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Rama Rama, Rama Rama. The reason I took the beads out of the bag was to see when I'm halfway done, if it's 2.5 minutes. So if I'm behind, I have to chant faster. So I did that for several days, and I could never do it faster than 5.5 minutes. I was thinking, how does he do 5-minute rounds? So then I was thinking, how can I do it faster? And I realized I was losing time by breathing. So I had to cut down my breathing, so I came up with this strategy. I take a deep breath. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, like that. I chant like 8 mantras in one breath. And then go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. So I was doing like that for some time. I still couldn't do 5-minute rounds. How does he do it? Then I figured, how many rounds does Haridas Thakur chant? How long does it take him? How fast? I was making all these calculations, you know. So I was doing this for some time. Now the one good thing about this was that I was very focused, because you can't space out. So I'm always focused, hearing the mantra and seeing the time, checking everything if I'm halfway done. Taking my deep breaths, 8 mantras at a time. So I was doing this for some time. So I couldn't do 5-minute rounds, but we were finishing, you know, really quickly. And then we'd go out and distribute books. Anyway, I gave up doing that. And I came to another phase. But there was something good about the chanting fast like that, and something not so good. The good thing was that I was completely focused. Completely focused. The not so good thing was that it was completely mechanical. There was no feeling, no bhav, no nothing. So after a while I thought, okay, so let me stop doing this. And I went to a different strategy, which was slow chanting. Just Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So the good thing about slow chanting is you can put some bhav and feeling into it, but it takes a lot longer. So now I need more time. So instead of like 1 hour and 20 minutes or 1.5 hours or 2 hours, I'm talking about 3 hours. So that was one phase I was into. Then I had a different realization, because what happened was I got married, and then I had an added responsibility of maintaining my grihastha situation. So I discovered that while I was chanting japa, I was very good at solving my problems, figuring out the problems. And so sometimes when I had a problem I needed to figure out, I couldn't figure it out, I'd pick up my beads and start chanting. So I was doing that for some time, and one day I had the realization that this was very, very bad thing to do, because I'm training myself up that it's all right to think when I chant the mantra and not to hear. I went like completely from hearing perfectly to the worst situation imaginable. So that's when I said to myself, I got to train myself up now that whenever I chant, I can't think. So I have to preach to my mind. And I had to just you know, chant in such a way that to stop this thinking. And then gradually I came to the realizations of what I just shared with you. So I went through a whole journey of, you know, trial and error to come up with this system that is really the most powerful. It's because we're training the mind. We're also opening up the heart and offering to Krishna. We're establishing a relationship. And for me, the chanting of Hare Krishna became the most important thing in my life. And I used to love to just sit alone by myself with a harmonium and just sing and sing and sing. Not only that, but when I was in bed at night, in my mind I'd be singing. I'd sing different melodies and I'd see how they'd go, like this and that, and I was just totally absorbed in it. Then I began to travel and do all these kirtan events all over the world, not just in ISKCON centers, but I was doing yoga centers, singing to Mayavadis, singing in hospitals, singing in so many homes, different situations. And I discovered that sometimes I'd come back at night, late at night, and I couldn't sleep because the mind was so supercharged with chanting all the time. I'd be laying awake at night thinking, I've got to get some sleep, but all I could think of was the kirtan. My mind would be singing, I'd be, you know, this raga or that raga, and I'd be fully absorbed in the chanting. And I realized, I had a realization then, that this, that what I was experiencing occasionally is what Prabhupada and Rupa Goswami and the six Goswamis were experiencing every single day. That they were so surcharged with spiritual energy from the chanting, they didn't need to sleep. It was not an austerity. They just weren't tired. And sometimes people come up to me, like yesterday, we did a program in Kar, and or today also someone came up to me in the morning, and I get it all the time. They say, where do you get the energy to chant the way you do? Because obviously, I'm no longer a young man. Maybe some of you noticed. And I tell them, the energy comes from the mantra. Simply by chanting the mantra, connecting to the mantra, you get the energy because the mantra is Krishna. And so I received various realizations, and I'm going to share one with you right now by asking a question. We've been discussing Bhagavad Gita, and everybody here is reading Bhagavad Gita. Am I correct? Everyone's reading and studying Bhagavad Gita. So here's my question. Advaitam Achyutam Anadim Anantarupam. Krishna has Anantarupas. Which form of Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita? Let me hear from you, and then I'll give you my understanding. Who wants to? Which form of Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita? Anyone want to make a suggestion? That's my realization too. Maha Mantra Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita. Some people say Dwarka Krishna. Some say Paramatma Krishna. But for me, it's Mahamantra Krishna. And for him also, Jai. So when Krishna says, Sarva Dharman Paritya Ja Ma Me Kang Sharanam Vaja, Mahamantra is saying, forget all other dharmas and just surrender to chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Ahang Prang Sarva Pape Bhyo. And Mahamantra will destroy all those sinful activities. Moksha Ishami, Mahamantra will give moksha. Everything that Krishna says For me, it's Maha Mantra, Krishna, who's saying it. And why do I come to that? Because ye yata mam prapajyante tam stataiva bhajam yaham. As you approach Krishna, he reciprocates in that way. So I approach through Maha Mantra, and he reciprocates through Maha Mantra. Arjuna approached through a different way, and Krishna reciprocated for his way. For in each and every one of you, Krishna will reciprocate as you approach him. It's all individual. It's all personal. It's not a formula. Hare Krishna.
How much time do you take now?
Well, it varies because I don't have a regular schedule. I don't stay in a temple. I don't get up in the morning and have a regulated schedule. I travel. Sometimes we're on a plane. Sometimes we're on a train. Sometimes I leave and it's Ekadasi, and when I get to my destination the next day, it's also Ekadasi there. Sometimes we leave and the next day is going to be a festival day, but when we get there to the destination, the festival day was the day before and we missed it completely. So there's no like fixed, you know, it varies. There is no fixed thing because I don't have a fixed. It's very, how should I say? It's chopped up, kind of, you know. It's a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit here, a little bit there. It's not just one sitting down. Occasionally it is, but when we travel it's not. So I put all my energy into the chanting, all the energy I can. That's one thing I didn't mention, but I put every ounce of energy into the chanting so that the quality will be there if sometimes the quantity isn't. So how long does it take? It takes sometimes 2 hours, sometimes 20 minutes. Depends on the situation. Sometimes I chant silently. Because you're on a train, it's too noisy, or a plane, you can't even hear. So I learned to chant silently. Anybody ever tried to chant silently? Yeah. And I realized that chanting silently is a very good practice, because when you chant silently, who's chanting? It's your mind. It's a good practice. But when I'm in Mayapur for the festival and I sit with all my god brothers there in the temple, we all chant together. It's just a regular 2 hour thing. It's not anything astronomical. But I notice that some devotees get up and finish before me, and some I get up and they're still not finished. So it's just a medium thing, nothing special. The 5 minute rounds thing never happened. But I became more interested in, you know, really establishing a relationship with Krishna. And that's how I got into the thank you. And in chanting with Prabhupada, like I never timed how long it takes Prabhupada to chant. But I just chant with Prabhupada. It just occurred to me that I should be doing that. Then I'll hear Prabhupada and me at the same time. Because what used to happen is they used to play Prabhupada's tape, Prabhupada chanting japa while we were chanting japa, and most devotees just chant japa, not really focusing on Prabhupada's chanting. And then somewhere along the line, I realized to sink in and chant exactly with Prabhupada was a much better way than just to ignore him. You see what I'm saying? So it all happened over a long period of time and gradually. But I don't always get to do that, because if I'm in a plane or a train, I can't put Prabhupada on and chant with him. You know what I'm saying? You're very fortunate because you're in a fixed place and you can have a fixed routine. I don't have that luxury. When you travel, there's two things you have no control over. People think, oh, you travel all over the world, so wonderful. It's not wonderful. There's two things you have no control over. Number one, you have no control over where you'll sleep or what you'll sleep on. Number two, you have no control over what you'll eat or where you'll eat or if you'll eat. We don't have control over these things, so it's austere. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.